Thank you, Dr. Santos, and welcome everybody. I'm going to talk about crop responses to elevated CO2, and particularly looking at some of the interactions with water and nitrogen and temperature. Okay, is this going to work? Okay, it's not going to work. There we go. We did the very first FACE experiment for your CO2 enrichment in Arizona back in 1989. Now, it's really not the first one, but it's the first one where we actually got publishable results. And so this is now the silver anniversary of that event, so for that season. We did that work on cotton, and then we went on and terrible. And worked with wheat after that, and we had interactions. We had drought treatments as well as low nitrogen treatments on these particular crops. Then we went on and worked with sorghum, and we had a drought treatment there. The second FACE experiment to going on crops was the Swiss experiment, where they were working with a couple of legume, white clover, mixed in, and then they had other treatments with ryegrass, both individually and in a mixture. That experiment went for 10 years. Another one that got going was in Italy. They had 4 years of work on grapevines in an apparatus that looked like this. I guess that's working. And then they also worked for a few years with potatoes. The Japanese got in the act, of course, on rice, and this is a picture of their experiment. Now, this particular one is all is continuing up through 2014. They've been looking, first they looked a lot on the interaction with nitrogen. They've looked at a lot of different cultivars. And then in 2014, they also added a warming treatment, an infrared warming treatment there. I don't have a picture of that. In 2001, the soy FACE experiment got started in Urbana, Illinois, first with CO2. Then they've added an ozone treatment. They've added drought. And in more recent years, they also got an infrared warming treatment out there. So they're looking at several interactions, both in soybean and in corn. And Braunschweig, Germany got started in 1999, doing a rotation of barley and ryegrass, sugar beet, wheat, and so forth. And then in recent years, they got going on corn. And I learned a couple of hours ago that there's a mistake on the slide. This is really wheat and not corn like I thought it was. But in any event, they have now added infrared heaters out there on the wheat. And so they're looking at wheat now plus infrared warming in that experiment. Chinese space experiment got going. They've been looking at rice. Does that help? Yeah, it does. So they've been looking at several years looking at nitrogen treatment. And I'm going to say right now that when they did a low nitrogen treatment, their yields weren't very much lower than their regular nitrogen treatments. And so I don't like... when I show you some slides with low nitrogen, I don't think the nitrogen was very low. In recent years, they've been looking at several hybrid varieties and also the interaction with nitrogen there. They also rotate with wheat in their rice experiments. And I've just recently learned that a second Chinese FACE experiment has got going on in Beijing. And I don't have any pictures of it. Then the pH FACE got going. The prairie heating and CO2 experiment's been going in Cheyenne. That's not exactly a crop, but at least it is agricultural. It's definitely rangeland there. And So that's what their experiment looks like, where they're looking at both elevated CO2 and warming in this experiment. Australians got in the act back in 2007, and this is a slide where they have both wheat and field peas that it's been going in a rotation, and they've been doing a lot of work with different wheat varieties and looking at wheat quality. And the most recent one I know of to get going was down in Brazil, and they're doing an experiment with a C3 legume and a C4 grass. These are both forage grasses that are used in the livestock industry down there. And that just, like I said, just got underway about a year ago. I'm going to talk first about the effects of CO2 alone. I'm going to show you, I've been keeping up with four different things, and that's the update I'm really going to talk about that's in the title. But I thought I should talk a little bit about photosynthesis, since that's important. And the most recent review I'm aware of was the one done by Ainsworth and Rogers back in 2007. You can see that if here's 0%, this is percentage change to elevated CO2, that the increases due to the CO2 have been on the order of, this is terrible, forget the recording. You can see that the increases due to elevated CO2 have been on the order of about 15% or so for several of the crops. If you look at trees and shrubs, it looks like their photosynthetic response has been even more. But anyway, that gives you some idea of what photosynthetic response. Now let's go to stomatal conductance, and you can see that zero is way over here, and that stomatal conductance has been reduced by the elevated CO2. There's the average where the gray is here. There's a hint that maybe the C4s maybe have a little more reduction than the C3s, but the error bars overlap. You can see most of them are over here. Now the trees and the shrubs, it looks like their reductions in CO2 are somewhat less than the herbaceous crops. Okay, here's one that's where I've been keeping track of it. This is evapotranspiration measurements, and you can see that generally evapotranspiration has been reduced perhaps 7 to say 17%, somewhere in this range here for most of the crops. When nitrogen was limited, why there's an even greater reduction in evapotranspiration. Here's cotton. That's one of the crops that's the most responsive with regard to increase in leaf area and biomass, and we measured very little change in the ET for it. Now, when water is limiting on a season-wide basis, where you have both the ambient CO2 plants and the CO2 enrichments using up all of their water. So there's really no change in a season-long ET due to the elevated CO2. That came up in one of the talks yesterday. I don't know if anybody was there or not. Then anyway, in canopy temperature, if the stomates are closed, you get a warming of the crop. Most of the warming has been from, say, around a half a degree up to a little bit more than that. It's detectable. It's not real big, but it's definitely there. If nitrogen is limited, the increase is actually a little bit more. Sorghum and maize, it looks like we got an experiment we did with sorghum, quite a change in canopy temperature with it. I threw this one in because it was available just for a comparison from another woody plant. Okay, I didn't mean to put that one in. But this particular slide basically tells everybody all they need to know about the interaction with water. And here's why. We're going along here. There's a rain event here. And everything below the line then, this is the ratio between the evapotranspiration or latent energy use by soybean crop. And they're going along here with the face plants using less water than the ambient plants. At this point, the ambient plants run out of water. They close their stomates. The CO2-enriched ones keep on going, using up the savings that they had in the soil water supply. And the at this point, they're using more water because they still have some to use. So the real interaction with water then has to do with how many days the crop can keep going on the stored water. If they get a rain comes at this event, there's not going to be any effect of water. If you get way out here, why? I mean, they're going to use the same amount of water. It's how many days it can keep going after it runs out of water. Got to get going here. Okay, above ground biomass. That's a very important one. You can see wheat and rye and grass, rice, and so forth. Pretty tight error bars, about a 14% or so increase in yield. Not much difference in due to the water. Sorghum and maize, no effect on biomass, just like you'd expect with that, except when you have the water stress thing in there, thrown in there. Potato, the root crops. Look at this. Very little effect. This is just above ground biomass now. So remember that one for the next slide. Clover's up there a little bit higher. Soybean, cotton, and the woody plants look like maybe they're a little bit higher. This is some results thrown out from natural ecosystems just for comparison. Much bigger variability as you'd expect, but you can see kind of where they are. Okay, agricultural yields. If nitrogen is limited, no effect here. There's the forage ryegrass, about 10% increase or so. Wheat, rice, we're running right in through here. There's the low nitrogen one, I don't believe, mostly dominated by the Chinese data. However, the Chinese have also started working with hybrid rice varieties. And lo and behold, they've got some hybrid rice varieties that are way up here, about a 30% increase. There was a paper published in 2009, and then didn't hear anything. And then last week, I got another one. The yield rate, this 32% increase, is still there, and it's been sustained over several years now of data. So that's really pretty exciting. It's a high-yielding cultivars. The Japanese did a trial with a whole bunch of different varieties, and they had a huge range of responses. It's up out like that. And maybe I can throw out here that in Australia they've been doing kind of the same thing, only it isn't published yet, but there's a huge difference in different varietal responses there. Potato tubers, look at this one. Pretty high right there. Now this is much higher than you saw what the biomass was. There's sugar beet, still kind of low. Then here's that cassava one. That's off the map. I don't know how that one got published, but there it is. So anyway, clover, kind of what you'd expect, and so on down here. How am I doing, really? Through a couple minutes. Okay, I'm going to skip some. I consult your intelligence. If this is the way most modelers plant a whole bunch of model a whole bunch of different processes. There's a base temperature below which nothing happens. Then if you get in this part of it, any increase in temperature increases things. You can see if we get a benefit from CO2, we could have an additive effect. Up here, not much response to CO2. Then down over here, I mean the temperature, if an increase in temperature here, it's detrimental, and so CO2 and CO2 and warming are compensating for each other. I was going to talk a little bit more and do a tangent here on some of the results of our just pure warming experiment, but I won't do that very much, other than to say that up in the time there when wheat is normally planted, we weren't seeing the effect of warming. If it's spring planted, the heaters made the problem worse. If it was fall planted and the wheat was this tall and right at heading when the frosts came, why, we had a real problem, and then summer planted crops, no yield at all. There's the effect of warming on wheat. It looks like there's a lethal temperature around 32 if you average over the whole season. Okay, effects of CO2 and temperature. In the soy face experiment where they had the heaters out there, they got an effect of warming and CO2. These two have elevated CO2. This one are the warming. And it depends on whether it's a warm year or a cool year. And going back to that thing of what side of the optimum are you sitting on? And so, like over here, this is biomass, seed yield down here, biomass up here. Here you can see that the warming definitely had a real effect decrease. Here the warming and the CO2 are balancing each other out. And this one, why the warming and the CO2 were both being beneficial. In the face experiment, they've also got some results now. And this is a complicated slide, but let's just walk through the conclusions from it. Generally, elevated CO2 favored the C3 grasses. Warming favored the C4s, kind of what you'd expect. But then when they put them together, the C4s are winning. And that's both because of temperature, we think, as well as the beneficial effects of elevated CO2 on the water savings effect for the C4 plants under this prairie condition. So, and then productivity was up overall. This slide has to do with water use. It's more of a theoretical slide, but it's also confirmed by the work in the pH face experiment. If you are going in, and this is the control point right here, and you increase the CO2, you knock down evapotranspiration to about here. If you do the warming, ET goes up, but of course this is the amount that it went up in that face experiment, but there's no, it's predicted to keep on going. But anyway, you do the warming and the CO2, they're pretty much compensating, and this result is what they basically saw in that face experiment. And with that, I thank you for your attention.